So we saw lots of companies that had proposals, particularly for liquefied natural gas, but for some other of the dirty unconventional oil and gas sectors. Also, plans that they had kind of put on the shelves for a few years suddenly started dusting those off year when they started to see prices going a lot higher and really jumped on that moment to expand liquefied natural gas and other fossil fuels that we know we just can't, not only don't need, but really can't stand to extract and burn if we're going to stay within our climate goals.
Do you think the big banks and the fossil fuel companies know what happens if they go ahead with their expansion plans as far as the climate goes?
That's a hard question. We've got pretty good evidence that fossil fuel companies have known for a long time that burning fossil fuels increases concentrations of greenhouse gases, and that those greenhouse gases are heating up the planet, and that's likely to make it unlivable for all of us. And the fact that we know that they've known that for a while makes me not particularly trust them. So, for example, we sometimes hear from banks that they want to fund their clients to transition away from fossil fuels and to take the lead on a decarbonized economy. And I don't share that trust in fossil fuel companies to be able to lead us towards a decarbonized future, given that they've brought us to where we are right now. Banks, I think, have a little bit better chance of being taken seriously in their climate commitments. We have definitely seen some movement among banks, the biggest global banks in the last few years, in terms of beginning to articulate some climate commitments. Those climate commitments continue to be not ambitious enough to meet the challenges of the moment. And in many cases, we see loopholes that allow them to continue financing fossil fuels and raking in the profits that we know can come from those, particularly in times of high geopolitical conflict, like last year with the conflict in the Ukraine.
This expansion, as your report makes clear, is going on all over the globe. My studio is near Vancouver, Canada, so let's start here. We know the Alberta tar sands are among the most carbon-intensive fuels in the world, and you should read that as the most polluting. Who's paying to keep them going and even fund new projects there?
I mean, unequivocally, the top Canadian banks are the ones that are behind the development of the tar sands, financing the key companies that are doing the work there. So we see something like 88% of financing for tar sands companies is coming from those Canadian RBC, Scotiabank, TD. Those are the key actors financing the tar sands companies.
Yeah, but they're all in there. The Canadian and Commerce, Scotiabank, Bank of Montreal. Basically, that means everyone with a bank account in Canada is funding tar sands climate wrecking, whether we know it or not. Shouldn't the banks at least disclose investments? Maybe we should have to sign off. Yes, I agree. I will pay for the tar sands and the climate wreckage.
Yeah, unequivocally, I think that's spot on. And I think that's the sort of absolute minimum ask, is for banks to be much more clear way exactly where their financing is going. And in addition to that, really setting much more ambitious kinds of targets for how they're going to decarbonize the portfolios that they've got. So we see RBC expanding their financing to major tar sands companies like Cenovus and Enbridge, right? Those two companies got $20.8 billion in financing in 2022 from the 60 banks covered in our report. But again, the lead banks on that are just Canadian banks.
So a bank practically unknown outside America is the fastest growing investor in climate doom. I'm talking about PNC Financial Services Group, based in Pittsburgh. According to Wikipedia, PNC is on the list of the largest banks in the United States by assets and one of the largest banks by number of branches, deposits, and number of ATMs. So this is no Wall Street player or hedge fund. PNC is a consumer bank. It's using the money deposited by ordinary Americans to increase their fossil fuel financing by 77% from 2021 to 2022, according to your report. If our listeners may bank with PNC, what can they do about it?
This is a tricky question, partly because we don't see a whole lot of banks that are doing really, really well in terms of their climate commitments. So it's not exactly easy for me to say, just go shift your money to some other bank that's doing a lot better, because we don't actually see any super great examples other than a couple of banks like La Banque Postale in France. My advice is really to take seriously the mission that the banks have, which is to protect our money, to evaluate the risks into the future that might come up for our money, and to hold them accountable to that, right? To say, this is actually the most significant risk that's facing us in our current moment. And banks have an obligation, right, as a foundational institution in our society, as an institution that we all chirp savings with our retirement. I think we have a right to expect them to be taking rigorous account of these kinds of risks and to make that known to them as customers, right? Particularly for a bank like PNC that has such a strong consumer banking angle.
For me, the most frightening fossil fuel projects are appearing in the Arctic. Everybody knows the Arctic is warming times faster than the rest of the planet. If that permafrost thaws and releases all the carbon stored there, we are literally toast. I thought there was some sort of unspoken exploiting the Arctic, but why? New projects like the Willow in North Alaska, they're happening right now. Why is that?
Your guess is as good as mine. Why anybody thinks that's a good idea? In order to accomplish that, they even have to refreeze part of the permafrost because the drilling equipment needs to have the permafrost frozen, and the fossil fuels that are acting, the burning of them is making that permafrost thaw. So it just defies all logic as far as I am concerned. One of the things, and I'm glad you brought it up, because we see loopholes in bank policies. So banks are able to what really looks like greenwash through some of their policies. We saw a number of banks over the last few years issue Arctic exclusion policies, so saying that they wouldn't fund projects for oil and gas extraction in the Arctic. There are a couple loopholes around that. The first loophole is the one that we see with the Willow project, which is that those exclusion policies specify that they won't give project finance. Well, project finance is a very specific kind of financial transaction where the proceeds are designated for a particular project. It gets written into the balance sheet in a particular kind of way. The use of proceeds are really clearly articulated for that kind of finance. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on which perspective you've got, only 4% of the transactions that we've got in our data set are project finance. So that means if a bank has made a policy and said, we won't finance any projects in the Arctic, so only 4% of all of our deals are project finance and thus would be applicable to that. So instead, more typically, what we see is oil and gas companies and coal companies too, instead of asking for project finance, they either through a loan, they issue a bond, and the use of proceeds is designated as for general corporate purposes. So they don't specify a project that they're going to apply that to. They'd say, we're going to use this for general corporate purposes. It's going to go where it needs to go to facilitate our ongoing business. So that's the case with Willow. ConocoPhillips received financing from several of the major banks. I think a syndicate of 12 banks lent money to ConocoPhillips in 2022. That financing was all with the use of proceeds designated as for general purposes rather than specific finance. So that Arctic exclusion policies that some of those banks had didn't apply in that case. The other big loophole that we see with the Arctic is the geographic designation. So the few banks that do have policies will define the Arctic as the Arctic Circle. So they draw that perfect circular line. Well, that's not really environmentally or politically or economically accurate. If you look at the definition of the Arctic that has been articulated by the Arctic Council, which is the international body that governs the Arctic, the geographic designation is much broader. It's much more complex, so a little bit harder to navigate. And we see a significant number of assets, between 100 and 200 oil and gas extraction assets are located within the Arctic, outside of the Arctic Circle, but with that Arctic Council definition of the Arctic. So we see lots of loopholes like this in bank policies and just see this as a way that they're greenwashing, telling us on the one hand that they're addressing the climate crisis, on the other hand, continuing to engage in business as usual with their fossil fuel clients.
Many of my listeners are concerned about the Amazon rainforest. We need to conserve that massive sink, and it's a pool of species found nowhere else on the planet, and some people actually live there, and they have rights. But there is more planet wrecking going on than just deforestation or fire. Tell us about the growing role of oil and gas extraction in the Amazon.
Really glad to be able to incorporate an assessment of bank financing for, in this case, 21 companies' evidence of direct involvement in oil and gas extraction in the Amazon biome in Brazil, Ecuador, Peru, and Colombia. So again, like with the Arctic, we use a more expansive, environmentally appropriate definition of the Amazon biome. So the Amazonian geo-referenced socio-environmental information networks definition of the Amazon biome. If you use that definition as opposed to the vague and really not kind of not precise definitions that the few banks that do have Amazon policies use, lots of extraction going on there. So we see Santander, a Spanish bank, is the top financier of Amazon oil and gas extraction. But some U.S. banks, J.P. Morgan Chase, Citi, Bank of America, also have exposure in that region. We see some really pretty reckless projects happening. GeoPark is a big driller in the Colombian Amazon, really has a bad track record of environmental and social issues and a long history of resistance and fight from indigenous folks on the ground. Frontera, Gran Tierra, a couple other companies that are drilling. And we just know that in places like Amazonia, where there's a high level of biodiversity, and that biodiversity is standing in the way of extracting oil and gas, we see forest destruction, and we see companies just plowing over the rights of indigenous peoples, human rights, just tremendous pollution and irreparable damage that happens as a result of this.
It's lawlessness in the jungle, and it's being funded by banks that we know and perhaps are invested in.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock, now broadcast by over 60 college and community radio stations, Gates, Canada, Britain, and Australia. I'm Alex Smith, saying, as we head into a crisis of energy, economy, and the environment, we need alternative voices more than ever. Please circle nonprofit station.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. Our guest from the Rainforest Action Network is April Merlot, Director of Research. We're talking about the new Banking on Climate Chaos Fossil Fuel Finance Report 2023. April, as American coal miners go bankrupt and coal's share of electricity production in the U.S., we think of coal past tense. But what did your report find out about financing of coal in China and India?
Coal financing does seem to be declining. The cost for coal developers is increasing, which I think is a good sign in some ways, because the more expensive it is to produce coal, the more likely producing it, because it's reflecting the true cost to our society. We do see with coal power, the investments that continue to go in or the financing to support coal power are predominantly coming from Chinese banks. So we've got 13 Chinese banks in the scope of our report, and the vast majority of the financing to coal power is coming from those banks. Unfortunately, it's not just those banks. We do see a handful of other banks, including, as you said, the State Bank of India, but also still having some exposure are some U.S. banks, so J.P. Morgan Chase, Citi, and a couple of Japanese banks, including Mizuho, BC, MUFG. So those are the three big Japanese mega banks also still putting some money into coal power. Similarly, a handful of Canadian banks last year put some money into coal mining. Yeah, far too many banks still with exposure to coal mining, given the urgency of the coal phase out. I mean, you mentioned coal miners. I think I would just add in there that one of the real issues, I think, with the continued financing of coal mining is that really every dollar that goes to financing coal mining is a dollar that's not going to creating those really good jobs that I hope are right on the horizon in the clean energy, more just, people-centered energy system that really has the potential to create a lot of jobs and help pivot in a much more just way for those that are impacted by a phase out of fossil fuels. So there's a real opportunity here, I think, to have a just transition where it's not like we're just kicking people out of jobs, but really thinking about what the new jobs are going to be, asking our financial institutions to shift their financing that they're enabling that new economy and those new jobs.
And your groups found bank financing to fossil fuel companies did not go up in 2022. Is that not good news, a sign that these banks get the message, they're living up to their green pledges?
So there's one bank where I think it's good news, and that's La Banque Postale, French bank that made a commitment in 2021 to stop financing fossil fuels. And out of that commitment, we saw zero financing from them in 2022. Our data set doesn't have any deals with fossil fuel companies for 2022. For the rest of the banks, including those whose financing for fossil fuels decreased in 2022, it's very difficult for me to see that as the beginning of a long-term trend as much as it's probably going to be an outlier. I don't see any evidence that it's the result of intentional policy decisions or changes in practices in those banks. Instead, I think attributable to things that are going on out in the world. So higher prices for fossil fuels really drove up those profits, as you mentioned, at the head of fossil fuel companies making really remarkable, outstanding levels of profit just didn't need to turn to banks for financing last year to the same degree that they have in the past. So that's certainly one factor, is fossil fuel companies not borrowing as much. You know, other things like interest rates being slightly higher, the dollar being strong against other currencies, those certainly are factors as well shaping the financing numbers. I just unfortunately don't think that bank policies are robust enough to explain the decline in financing. The fuel industry is on the brink of expanding yet again, and so we're likely to see an increase in 2023. And according to data compiled by our partner organization, Oil Change International, it looks like the fossil fuel industry is gearing up for a big expansion in terms of the number of barrels, billions of barrels of oil equivalent that come to a final investment decision in 2024. So we're expecting really a surge in fossil fuel financing in the next couple of years unless some changes in bank policies, unless government policy pushes banks to tighten up their lending and financing activities. But this is just really such a crucial moment, as I'm sure you and your listeners know, for speeding up the transition away from fossil fuels.
Yeah, this is one sad part in a way. It's almost like we're not fighting to stop fossil fuel, to slash them. We have to cut fossil fuel emissions in half by 2030, according to the United Nations, or risk a dangerous climate. What we're fighting now is the mad expansion of fossil fuels to burn even more, to accelerate this whole awful process.
Yeah, I mean, it's really just unconscionable to be expanding at all. And there's no way that we can stay below 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming, which, of course, is the point at which we know that the impacts are going to become exponential and more expensive, honestly, to adapt to. Every day I look around and am somewhat surprised at how people don't perceive the emergency that I think we're really in. And that IPCC report that came out last month, I think, tells us that there still is a window of opportunity. We still have a chance, but we need to move fast. And if we do that, if we're able to stop the expansion of fossil fuels, if we're able to begin not only to stop the expansion, but also phase down some of the existing assets, that we do still have a chance to stay within an amount of global heating that will keep the planet livable in the near future.
April Merlo, could you just list out the groups who are behind this Banking on Climate Chaos report?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. It's really quite a remarkable process. There are seven co-authoring organizations, so it's a big report, lots of work going in it. So Rainforest Action Network is the lead organization here. We also work really closely with the Indigenous Environmental Network, with Bank Track, which is an NGO in Europe, Oil Change International, Reclaim Finance, Sierra Club, and Ergovald.
Yes, we had the founder of Ergovald on Radio EcoShock. It's a great German environmental organization. What are the members of this coalition asking the world to do?
So we conclude the report with a recommendation specifically for banks. And those, I think based on our conversation, those recommendations aren't very difficult, really. So the first one is prohibit all finance for fossil fuel expansion immediately. Banks really need to just stop. They need to draw a really clear line, and that needs to apply to companies, not just projects. All those talking about earlier need to be cut out of those banking policies. We've seen a lot in the last couple of years of banks talking about their emissions reduction target, net zero targets. And I think on the one hand, that's very hopeful. On the other hand, we see many of those targets lacking ambition. And so we call on banks to adopt financed emissions targets, so really rigorous targets that are going to lead to a reduction in the absolute emissions of their clients. We call on them to demand transition plan fossil fuel clients, including the existing ones, not just new ones. We call on them to protect the rights of indigenous peoples and human rights. And we call on them to really dramatize their financing for a just and fair transition. So not too many demands, but a lot goes into making those realities. We know they're really complex institutions that do a lot of work to keep the global economy moving, but also have the potential to really support some pretty harmful projects on the ground. And really, I think as customers of those institutions, we all have the right and the obligation to be asking those institutions to live up to the promise of keeping our planet livable.
Yes, recently a few banks in the United States collapsed. The government made the depositors whole to avoid a cascade of bank failure. It was shaky, and it turns out the troubles came when people came and companies came and withdrew their money. And it sounds like we little people may have more power than we know, but as you've said, it's pretty hard to find a clean option. Maybe credit unions or a few banks will offer themselves as real alternatives, we can hope.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think credit unions certainly are often a good option, and I do think there's a growing demand for banks that really have washed their hands of fossil fuels, and so hopefully that will be something that we can turn to. And also, hopefully, some of the big banks really will take seriously this obligation to be facilitating a rapid transition. On the bank failures, I would just say, you know, one of the big issues that was going on there is shadiness about evaluating some of the risks that were on the horizon. And I know I mentioned this before, but I really do see one of the jobs that banks need to do in order to be viable and in order to be fulfilling their mission in our society is to be evaluating risks. So the banking crisis in the United States has, to me, more than anything, just reiterated that managing risks, including the climate risk, should be really top of the agenda for these financial institutions.
Well, now that the 2023 report is out, what else are you working on for RAND?
Well, you know, there's so much work building this data set that I haven't quite had as much time as I would like to dig in and find all the patterns that there are. It's a huge data set, so I'm playing around in the data set to identify what other trends might be going on that we hadn't picked up on yet. And I'll probably write a couple of other reports next couple of months. I'm interested in writing a report about the loopholes that I was talking to you about, trying to understand a little bit more clearly how those loopholes are enabling banks to continue business as usual. Also really interested to think about the relationship between bank policies and the financing they offer. So our report incorporates some really great analysis of bank policies that's done by our partners at Reclaim Finance and BankTrack. And so really looking forward to trying to figure out how to effectively assess the relationship between those bank policies and the actual financing banks are putting out.
Well, the report's easy to read, lots of good graphics. Where can our listeners download it?
Yeah, so we've got a beautiful website called Banking on Climate Care, and you can explore the data. There's some data downloads. There's the full PDF of the report that you can download. It includes, in addition to the data and to the policy assessment, so stories from folks who are fighting really disastrous fossil fuel build-out around the world, including in liquefied natural gas in Africa and Asia, States, North America.
From the Rainforest Action Network, we've been speaking with Dr. April Merlot, Director of Research Find more links and my notes to follow up in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Thank you for throwing light on this matter, April.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
The massive record-smashing heat wave across Southeast Asia is not getting the news it deserves. If this was happening in North America or Europe, you would be bathed in reporters talking about heat deaths, absolute record smash, plus damage to crops and the economy. But hey, it's India, Bangladesh, Laos, and Thailand. Do we really care? I am working on that story for you. We also missed another major climate signal. Glaciologist Jason Box has been presenting on the Great Melt there last September. Normally, if that word has any meaning, September in Greenland is getting cold again. Nights in the capital of Nuuk average close to freezing. Higher up and further north, it is all frozen. But in September 2022, the unimaginable happened. The whole long coast of Greenland, so long you can barely imagine it, continued to melt into that month of September. A continuing series of storms and atmospheric rivers struck Greenland, bringing rain, strange September rains to Greenland, even in the highlands. High in the glaciers, temperatures were up to 8 degrees C above anything recorded over the last 25 years. Watery snow and ice is darker, reflecting less energy back to space. Greenland rivers were raging, pouring more fresh water into the world's ocean, adding to sea level rise. The ramifications are many and large. In the scale of planetary history, this was an event much larger than any human affairs. Did you know this happened? Most of us are over-informed about the lives of celebrities and scoundrels. We do not learn when our planet is sending out distress. It is we and our descendants who will live out that distress. Radio EcoShock, bringing you voices that matter. I'm Alex, again this week, and caring about our world.
You're on the air, Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. Hi.
Yes, Mr. Bell. I'm going to give you an explanation of why the so-called global warming is occurring. Instead of just letting you and all your liberal listeners attack our glorious oil companies, our great American oil companies.
Glorious oil companies?
Yes, they are. They have this country and have stepped into a wonderful powerhouse of economics. But don't try to get me off topic here. I'm going to tell you what is happening with global warming. It is because hell is becoming hotter, Mr. Bell. More filthy souls are cast down into the center of the pit of hell.
Yes. Stoking the fires of hell, right?
The boiling fires, the boiling pits of sewage of hell are becoming hotter every day.
Now, global warming.
That's correct.
Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with the Mano de Bongo. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you? Good morning, good morning. This is your own Sister C, Charlotte Farrell, here at the place you know to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Bernard, being worldwide at cjsf.ca. We have had such a good time this month celebrating International Poetry Month. We have a special guest this morning who's Jackie, the real, only James Wilwicky. We are going to have another guest as well from Megaphone. Megaphone, we've talked about, it is a cooperative economics type of business. It is unique in that it allows, it's a micro business, it allows